I wonder if you could comment, pick your pick on the inside job, 9/11, the obvious one, but let's say the sending of the nukes to Cairo, Operation Pluto, the BBC documentary, Dead in the Water, to cover that one. And then I remember a little over a dozen years ago mentioning to you that I had been arrested on Hiroshima Day where the nukes come from, 5300 Port Chicago Highway. That video is a great from track to YouTube, and I beat them in federal court, but that also, the 44 explosion, the first detonation of uranium, unless you believe they tested an untested bomb in Hiroshima. So if we call them on their inside jobs, you short-circuit these wars, especially 9/11, and that's so obvious with the third skyscraper
exploding. So what are you going to do?
Well, talk about any of those three that you care to, and, you know, expose our American
life. Stop. I live in Australia. Mm-hmm. I'm not American. You are. This is your country.
I'm not a shrink. They're in denial, and rationalization is the flip side.
Don't argue with me. I've given you your marching orders.
Yeah, so, as I just said, American mind is in denial, and denial is not a river in Europe. I mean, Africa. Well, you know the old saw, denial is not a river. But there's the Nile song. Yeah, that was my next segue. Bad DJ, but let me jump to https://. Marca Cassidy, MarcaCassity .bandcamp.com/track/enemy. Little thing goes round and round. To myself, because this is from Deeper. Deep breath of your fear, breathe out compassion to you, and the next breath is for all the people who can't.
can relate to me and you. You cannot see eye to eye. Won't you step up with me and try? Drop the fences down, find the common ground. Take a deep breath.
Omran and Abdullah. One boy, Omran, is alive and well today. The other, Abdullah, had his head slowly sliced off with a blunt knife by the US armed and trained FSA rebels. But it was Omran's dust-covered face which appeared in every headline and front page of every mainstream media outlet around the world, while Abdullah's face was concealed and his story covered up. Just compare the BBC's coverage of the two incidents. Omran's photo is in the center and clearly visible. In the other case, the BBC actually cropped out Abdullah's face completely in the photo that they used. The BBC's headline was also an attempt to justify the beheading of a child. The handful of articles that did cover the child's beheading also censored the child's face from their front cover. Why is one child, one face, one name worth your attention while the other child who was brutally murdered by CIA-trained terrorist group Harakat Helsinki was not? The answer is obvious. NATO powers don't want their people to find out the nature of the terrorists that they support. Showing the world Abdullah's face would have been too damaging to the terrorist rebels and would have gone viral and out of control. Claims that the Omran image went viral on its own because of aesthetics are garbage. This little girl from West Aleppo was shelled by the rebels and had a similar photo taken of her tusk-covered face, but the mainstream media did not use her image at all. They never told the world her name, Rim. The mainstream media decides what goes viral. They report approved stories in a coordinated manner.
Including taking this picture from the guy who did the selfie with goons beheading the 11-year-old. Embedded with the death squad. That's the guy that took this last picture. Well, anyway, this is all part of the Arab sting, and this morning I said, Seymour Hersh untangled that gas attack lie. Mother Agnes identified children kidnapped in Latakia in those bogus Chemtech videos. Okay, I'll put you on hold. That was the engineer, obviously. Cut off. So I redialed ring, 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 dial tone. That was the producer. But that was Mitch's show this morning, passing the gas attack false flag lie, while the co-authors protested too much about their 182, 187. Oh. Raven,
I'm craving flood. She takes me between the two worlds. She's got magic in her dark wings. In her heart lies the blue pearl. I am hungry. I've got some honey.
Time for myself, time to develop.
have been recruited, I've been persecuted, and it just seems to keep coming round. Yes, but I am not afraid. I'm the man today, 'cause he revealed himself in a past life interaction we had. Make no mistake, he burned me at the stake.
They decide not to tell you that their Al-Qaeda-linked rebels are shelling civilians and beheading kids. And here is the most shocking part of the story that you weren't told. The man who took the photo of dust-covered Omran in the ambulance, whose name is Mahmoud Ruslan, had taken a selfie with the same child beheaders. You can see how he is wearing the same blue shirt when he took Omran's photo and when he took a smiling selfie with child beheaders. The red arrows show the corresponding individuals. One minute he's crying crocodile tears over an injured child, and the next minute he's laughing it up with child beheaders. The selfie was posted on his Facebook and was taken 5 weeks after they beheaded the child, showing that he approves of the deed. He outright admitted to the Telegraph that he took the selfie with the child beheaders, Harakat al-Zinki rebel group. But in his idiocy, he tried to justify this by claiming that 12-year-old Abdullah was actually a 19-year-old dwarf, as though that makes the beheading okay in his demented mind. In any case, his beheader friends disagree with his lame cover-up attempt.
هاي أسرى لواء القدس اليوم ما ضل عنده زلم ما ضل عنده زلم بعث لنا أطفال اليوم ما شاء الله ما ضل عنده زلم تكبير
الله أكبر
هاي كليبك يا بشار هاي كليبك عند معك على أولاد
أطفال لواء القدس
أطفال لواء القدس الله
أكبر. In the humanitarian Mahmoud Ruslan's other Facebook posts, he encourages suicide bombings. One post reads, "With the suicide fighters from the land of battles and butchery, from Aleppo, we bring you tidings of impending joy." Another reads, "Thousands of suicide fighters and tens of booby traps are being prepared for the great battle in Aleppo. The first battle where I see men weeping because they can't participate." And in other posts, he's seen wearing the colored headbands of the fighters he hangs out with, revealing that he too is likely a fighter.
It doesn't show on radio, but on the screen was the translation of the Arabic, and the kid there shaking by the hair, they're saying, "Look, they're sending children. The Assad government is sending children," and they know that's a child. Obviously, it's a child.
This is very interesting, because Mahmoud Ruslan works for the AFP and is linked to the White Helmets group. His employers have a lot to answer to. Most importantly, the world must know the story behind 12-year-old Abdullah's beheading by the CIA-vetted, trained and armed rebel group Harakat al-Zinki. The CIA admit that they gave this group Tau missiles and trained them.
As I breathe in the air, I invoke the water, I honor the earth. I'm burned in the fire, I breathe in the air, I invoke the water, I honor the earth, I'm burned in the fire. Between the two worlds, she's got magic in her dark wings, in her heart lies the blue pearl.
To this date, the State Department will not confirm or deny whether they stopped funding them with US taxpayers' dollars. The world must learn about this. Abdullah's face must go viral. I ask everyone who is watching this video to share his story, to hashtag it on Twitter with Syrian Boy, to print out the picture with an explanation of what it is about and to place it on every newspaper stand. I'll leave you with 12-year-old Abdullah's last moments with the CIA-trained terrorists for historical documentation. Though it does not contain the beheading or any kind of blood or violence, I warn you that it is disturbing. The full translated video will be posted on my war channel. The untranslated video is already on LiveLeak. Plan B is just a copy of the Yinon Plan, drawn up by Israel in 1982, which calls for the use of Kurds as a means by which to divide and conquer the region. But just who exactly are the Kurdish YPG? The media claims they are the most moral force in Syria. But as usual, the media lies. What the media isn't telling you is the YPG are directly affiliated with the PKK, which the US has designated a terrorist organization. This is probably why the US Special Forces were told to remove the YPG insignia from their uniforms. The State Department knew it could become an embarrassment in future. So as usual, what the US government sees as terrorists yesterday are allies today, and perhaps terrorists again tomorrow.
Now, I've got that queued up at 8:23, so call up and remind me if I forget. 49ers 5150 to hell translates as 4951666. Oh, yeah. So, I'm going to go to this video that might not play so well, but we'll go back to, they're both Syrian girl, but she's talking about General Campbell was the one that worked with NBC spreading the lie that the Turkish president, who had just like apologized to Putin for our Tech Fury shooting down their jets and airliners, then they pulled the Gulen, Hillary's ghouls, okay? I've got $20 billion to run these Takfiri mosque business. Anyway, did Hillary go to spy school with Valerie Plame? I don't know, but her story, I told Daniel Ellsberg, needs to be examined on a forum with Sybil Edmonds, who was overseeing the fact that Grossman, number three in the State Department, was knowingly letting their spy, the Valerie Plame's company, be discovered by the AQ Khan network. Of course, no relation to Al-Qaeda, except that just like Saddam and Al-Qaeda, the connection between them is that you funded them both, gringo. Oh, yeah, there needs to be class action lawsuit against the media lapdogs for the conspiracy to murder, because that's probably possible. But, of course, included will be General Campbell and NBC as defendants. And the plaintiffs, the natural plaintiffs, are the families of the 200 and so many NATO coup victims, but as a human, I am offended by my role in that. As a taxpayer during the Contra War, it's the same Contras, counter-revolutionaries. It's ghouls in Gulenville, and it's Contras. And of course, last time we were through the Contra War in Central America, we learned escort the Contras to the hospital, and then they go back and they say, you can't kill them, they're the only one taking care of our family.
Hi, this is Spiro with NewsBud.
Hello everyone, this is Sybil Edmonds with NewsBud. Today we have some interesting news, updates, and developments for you for this episode. Spiro, you want to start?
On July 24th, NewsBud published an article and a video talking about NATO's involvement in the attempted coup that took place in Turkey on July 15th. As you can see here, the three most important regiments involved in the Turkey attempted coup plot and implementation have been, and still are, members of NATO's Rapid Deployable Corps since 2003. Be sure to come over here and check out this video. Since NewsBud broke the story of NATO's involvement in the attempted Turkey coup, more information has come to light, strengthening our report. As you can see here, it's being reported, former NATO commander was behind the failed coup attempt against Erdogan. The former commando of NATO forces in Afghanistan, retired U.S. Army General John F. Campbell, was the mastermind behind the failed military coup in Turkey, according to Yeni Safak. According to Yeni Safak, more than $2 billion in transactions was overseen by Campbell via the UBA Bank in Nigeria by using the CIA links to distribute the money among pro-coup military personnel in Turkey. Now, just before the coup took place, the retired U.S. general had allegedly paid two secret visits to Turkey since May, right before the attempted coup took place. Now, interestingly, this ties directly to our Confront NBC campaign in regards to General Campbell. Now let's go to Sabelle.
Thank you, Spiro. This new story revelation on General Campbell directly ties to our Confront NBC campaign. We started this campaign 5-6 days ago. We exposed NBC and MSNBC for planting and disseminating false information during the early hours, critical hours of the attempted Turkey coup. And this is what NBC did. NBC and MSNBC, during the early critical hours of attempted coup in Turkey, they put out this false information claiming that Turkey's President Erdogan had fled Turkey, had fled his country, and he was flying over Germany and requesting, begging for asylum from the German government. Of course, this information proved to be a lie, a major lie, false, and it was debunked. However, NBC and MSNBC, they put out this information, they disseminated it as fact, and interestingly, they attributed this information to NBC's senior military official as their source. In the past 2 days, via multiple sources, and I consider these sources insiders and reliable, General Campbell has been identified as the likely source for NBC's false information that was put out and disseminated during the critical hours of Turkey's attempted coup. So, and we have gotten this information from, again, I'm going to emphasize, multiple sources with access who have identified General Campbell as the likely source for NBC's PSYOP false information presented and disseminated during the critical hours of Turkey's attempted coup.
Now, yesterday, on July 25th, the Turkish embassy released an official statement to NBC News, and it states, the Turkish embassy demands NBC to redress the unacceptable journalism displayed during the Turkey coup attempt, and they even used our hashtag, #ConfrontNBC. You can see here, the last paragraph, since then, NBC has withdrawn the false allegation, but has neither thoroughly acknowledged its mistake nor issued an apology for that. Thus, we demand NBC News and Mr. Griffin, that's Kyle Griffin, to issue a formal apology for this unacceptable conduct. Failing to do so will result in questioning of the neutrality and accurate journalism of NBC News. Sincerely, the Turkish Embassy, Washington, D.C. Since the Turkish Embassy has released this demand letter, we have had some new developments. Sabelle?
Absolutely, Spiro. As we know, one of the culprits in this dissemination of this false PSYOP news put out by NBC and MSNBC was this producer named Kyle Griffin. He is employed by MSNBC, and as we went out there and we took a screenshot of his tweet that he was tweeting and disseminating, and as we know, hundreds of newspapers around the world picked up not only NBC's news, false information that was broadcasted by NBC, but also the tweet that was issued by Kyle Griffin. So yesterday, on July 25th, within a few hours after the Turkish embassy issued that demand letter to NBC News and their headquarters, I got an email from Kyle Griffin, MSNBC's producer. And let me put a reminder here. for the last 5 days, Kyle Griffin has been blocking us, NewsBud, has not been responding to any of our requests for information, has been blocking thousands, if not tens of thousands of people, concerned citizens here or the Turkish citizens who have been demanding explanation for the dissemination of false information knowingly. So no response from him until Turkish embassy issues, sends this demand letter, and lo and behold, within a couple of hours, I receive an email from Mr. Kyle Griffin. As you can see in this email, he actually is giving us permission to share his email with you, with our viewers. It says, please share this with your followers. NBC retracted the information. It was retracted on air when it became apparent the information was not accurate. My tweet was deleted. To be clear, the information was and is retracted. Please confirm you have received. Now, this is very interesting because he's not putting there any link that shows any on-air retraction. And as we know, for the past 5 days, he's been blocking all requests and demand for information. Well, as a news organization, we like transparency. With Kyle Griffin's permission, we just shared with you his email as we received it. And now I'm going to share with you, our viewers, the response I immediately sent to Kyle Griffin. And here is my email to Mr. Griffin. Dear Kyle, thank you for this email. We'd be more than happy to share this message with our viewers. However, before we do that, we need the following answers and documents. 1. You state NBC retracted the information. It was retracted on air when it became apparent the information was not accurate. Can you send us the audio-video clip of NBC officially retracting the story on air and stating that the information provided to them by their senior military source was false, inaccurate? We need to see documentation on this, Kyle. Because as you know, when you conduct Google News search using Erdogan, Germany, asylum keywords, hundreds of mainstream articles pop up quoting NBC News and re-reporting the false information put out and disseminated by NBC. I have not seen a single news article referring to NBC officially retracting this false story on air. 2. You state my tweet was deleted. Your tweet was on Twitter for at least a couple of days past July 15. Not only that, as you know, deleting the tweet does not translate to retracting the comment and informing readers that the information was 100% false. Why, in the last 10 days since the tweet and NBC false report, you have not issued any explanation or on record retraction to your viewers, readers. 3. For the last 5 days, thousands of people have been messaging you and NBC and asking for explanation, a response on this false reporting case. Why, instead of issuing a statement or providing an explanation, you and NBC have been blocking and ignoring these questions directed at you by thousands of people. And finally, NewsBud and the Turkish government via its embassy have demanded that NBC issues a public explanation and official apology immediately, not only to us, but to all its viewers. I have to emphasize immediately here. Are you and your employer at NBC planning to issue this public apology? If so, when? Sincerely, Sabal Edmonds. Well, since we sent this email to Kyle Griffin yesterday on Monday, July 25th, this is the response we have gotten to our questions. Okay, so where do we stand with our campaign, Confront NBC, as of now? Well, as we know, on July 25th, yesterday, Monday, July 25th, Turkish government issued its official demand letter to NBC News. Now, we are going to be gracious here. It's very hard to do, considering who we are confronting here. The propaganda machine called mainstream media, and NBC being one of them, we are going to be still gracious. We're going to give them 48 hours, which is more than generous, to put out public apology, public retraction, public explanation for this huge scandal, which even bigger and more significant implications. So that deadline for NBC is going to end at the end of Wednesday, July 27th. If we the people and the Turkish government and all the other concerned governments around the world, and they should be concerned, they don't receive a response which includes an official apology, official public apology, retraction, and explanation. They owe us explanation, people. Then, starting on Thursday, July 28th, we are going to bring you into this picture, and we're going to plan together, and we are going to switch our campaign from confront NBC, because we have done that, and we have gained victory so far, to occupy NBC, meaning we are going to plan together, we are going to unite, we are going to New York City, we are going to occupy NBC headquarters in New York City, and in person, we are going to demand that they provide information in front of our cameras, NewsBud crew. I'm going to be there with our camera people, with our other reporters. We're going to have the camera in their face.
And that was July, end of July, so let me go to...
Incidentally, the State Department recently asked Russia not to bomb Al-Qaeda in Syria. The media is also not telling you that nomadic peoples like Bedouins, Gypsies, and Kurds don't have states because by definition, nomads move around.
Ali Tahir Ibrahim and his family are Kurdish nomads from the Nuray tribe.
This was recorded August 13th in San Francisco at the Cret.
So he was fired in the process. He was the boss. There was another boss who was a gambling addict. And he was caught, I don't know, in Reno or something, somewhere gambling. So he was fired too. Fired before they launched. Now, that was on their website for a couple of days. I found it, but they took it off pretty fast. So any sort of international anxiety could trigger a nuclear war, and we're at a time of high international tension now. And I think, supposedly, Putin's probably paranoid. Why not? Being threatened by the United States with missiles right on his border. I know medically you don't threaten a paranoid patient, or they're likely to do something very extreme and hurt you.
This law requires all new homes to have...
Well, why not all law homes? Where's Jerry Brown? He should be retrofitting them right now. You could supply millions of jobs, like FDR with the New Deal. You could upgrade the economy if that's important to you, and help to save the planet.
I'll tell you where Jerry Brown is. He was at the Abolition 2000 conference, and I said, did you read Jim's story, which I had handed him at the We of the People forum on CIA drug running? And he said, no. And now I was with Peter Dale Scott's first wife, May Lee, and she had known Jim Wilcott. So I said, but you know of Jim Wilcott, and he had to say yes. But that's where Jerry Brown is. He does not even though I may have voted for him for the Oval Office, he does not gonna touch the story, the JFK assassination, a CIA insider's view, where because he was standing in the way of the military, the Northwood's plan to kill an American and use it as a pretext is explicitly laid out in that story. But
you're absolutely right.
But
get on to it.
That's what Jerry Brown is doing. He's not there. He's trying to put out.
I've only been using solar for 26 years. But what I wanted to bring up is the most important almost nuclear disarmament that we got on September 20, 1963. before I was born, John Kennedy went to the United Nations and called off the nuclear arms race, called off the Cold War, called off the space race, and said we should go to the moon as a joint effort with Russia. And one of the people who removed him from office 2 months later was General Curtis LeMay, who bombed Hiroshima. And part of the reason that we haven't dealt with this is the collective PTSD we have as a society, knowing that we don't have three branches of government, we have two. We have the overt government we were taught about in school, and we have the covert intelligence operatives for the real government. Obama came from the CIA, the Clintons worked with the CIA under George Bush the First, and these are, you will not hear this on NPR, you won't even hear it on Democracy.
Okay, well, we all understand that.
We all know. But if somebody is for this...
Yeah, we'll take it on and fix it. Don't
you try.
You understand?
Yes, Doctor, in denial, Helen, we understand. Denial is not a river.
Today, the American taxpayer is paying $30,000 in borrowed money every year for every man, woman, and child in Israel. It is a totally subsidized 51st American state. And I consider the Iranians to be the adults in the region. I also think it's important to point out to listeners and viewers that no government is monolithic. I mean, to its credit, the Mossad has broken with the Netanyahu government. I use that term deliberately, Yahoo. And they understand that the Zionist facet of the Israeli government is hurting everybody. From where I sit, the United States needs to close all of its bases overseas. It needs to end all of its military support, not only to Israel, but to the Arabs. And it needs to focus on a grand strategy that seeks to create peace and prosperity, so that as General Al Gray and I called for years ago, we do peaceful preventive measures that keep all these angry young men fully employed at home, not invading the borders of Europe. I'll also say that not enough is being done to study the illegal water theft by Israel from the Jordanian aquifer and by other means. Israel is doing many illicit cross-border activities that it's not being held accountable for. And one of the things I'd really like to see is an international interagency intelligence capability that is able to expose what are, in essence, gross violations of international law, not just by Israel, but by Saudi Arabia and others.
Well, this may become possible as the geostrategic balance in the region shifts. Our next slide shows Erdogan planning a visit to Tehran. It could come as early as this week, according to the story. He's already visited Putin. The reshuffling of alliances already seems to be underway. We already mentioned this. Any brief comments from either of you?
Yes, and in fact, I want to say that I think that Byzantine Europe has a bright future.
And we're going to go ahead and talk about Syria again today. And I think it's really important that we do so, because if you have been touching social media about this, you can see that there is a big battle being waged, not only on social media, but also in the press here in the United States, about this question of, first, what is the role of the United States in Syria? Are they really just supporting the so-called jihadist rebels, Syrian rebels, in order to fight ISIS? Or are they, in fact, playing a double game, which we've heard reports of, that the 300 U.S. military advisors on the ground in Syria have now been backing Turks, the YPG, the so-called People's Defense Units on the ground inside of Syria, who are now pivoting, it turns out, on the Syrian military, widening the conflict even further. And we've, of course, heard voices in the press that are calling for a no-fly zone. So this is a battle of major proportions, which is going to determine the role of the United States government in Syria over the next weeks and months here. And now joining me on Flashpoints is our guest, Henry Lowendorf. He's the executive committee member of the U.S. Peace Council. I invited Henry on today because his group, the U.S. Peace Council, was most recently in Syria on the ground on a fact-finding mission the end of July of this year. Henry Lowendorf, welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So give us a little bit of background about the U.S. Peace Council's visit this last July to Syria, and then we're going to get into what you guys actually observed that you can help us with to understand what's going on there.
Thank you. We recognize in the Peace Council that there's very little discussion about, and certainly no debate about what the U.S. role is or what's happening in Syria. It's all very one-sided. And we were quite upset that the leading peace organizations and peace coalitions in the United States were doing nothing. They were sitting on the fence, afraid to speak out for reasons we can go into, I believe, that the Peace Council came to the conclusion that we needed to break through this in some way. And the Peace Council is small. The U.S. Peace Council is small. But we've been involved in the broader U.S. peace movement for decades. And we engage with many major peace organizations and coalitions. We co-founded with others, United for Peace and Justice, co-founded Peace and Planet, and so forth. So we've engaged with many of these, and we've been raising the issue that there's nothing happening. We said, let's create as broad-based a delegation as we can to Syria and try to break open that discussion. And so that's what we did. We were there for 5 days, 6 nights, talking to as many people as we could, that basically not just people on the street, not so much people on the street, but people representing a wide range of non-governmental organizations and the government itself. And that's the background for this.
And that's the voice of our guest, Henry Lowendorf. He is on the executive committee of the U.S. Peace Council. They were in Syria on a fact-finding mission about 3 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks ago, the end of July of this year. Well, Henry, what did you guys see? What was your conclusion? I mean, there is, for want of a better word, a propaganda war going on in this country about U.S. involvement there. What was it that you guys actually saw on the ground? Who did you meet with, and what did you see?
First of all, there is a war, a propaganda war, but it's one-sided because there's almost no reporting on what's happening within the Syrian government secured area of Syria. Almost all the reporting in the United States comes from the territories that the invaders, the mercenaries, the various terrorist groups have taken, and that's what we hear.
When you say terrorist groups, you really mean U.S.-backed rebels, is what they call them in the press here.
I know. I'm not sure. They're not rebelling against. They're not so much rebelling against Syria. They are mercenaries that are being paid by Saudi Arabia and Qatar primarily. They're being supported and supplied through Turkey and Jordan. The United States is engaged. It has people on the ground. It has troops on the ground. It has been bombing. These are various terrorist groups. ISIS, which the United States calls an enemy. The Muslim Brotherhood, which it calls an enemy. And both of these are terrorist organizations, are leading this. Al-Qaeda is leading this, which keeps on morphing its names. And the media go with that as a means of confusing the people in the country because there's so many different names. But basically, these are terrorists. They're mercenaries that the leadership and thousands and thousands of them coming from over 80 countries around the world have invaded Syria. There are, in fact, yes, the Syrians accept this. There are Syrians who have joined these terrorist groups, but most of the terrorists are foreigners, and the leadership is foreign, the funding is foreign, and it is these groups are used as a means of overthrowing a sovereign government. That's the government of Syria. And let me just add, we knew beforehand that the United States was overthrowing the government. Every other week, we would get a different message from John Kerry. Yes, we're overthrowing the government. No, we're not. And finally, last week, Obama confirmed or made it even stronger. Yes, we're overthrowing the Syrian government. This violates U.S. Constitution. It violates international law. It violates the United Nations Charter, all of which compel the United States to not to do this, but it's doing it. And so we were in Syria to find out, well, how do the Syrians view this? Not the terrorists, not the people who are trying to violently overthrow the government, but the people within Syria, including people who are in the opposition. That is, they oppose President Assad, but they're doing it nonviolently. They're doing it within a democratic process, and they feel that they can do that. They have their differences. But there is, in Syria, we learned, basically a national unity government. That is, the people in the opposition, in the nonviolent opposition, people who were demonstrating in 2011, are joining with the government to throw these foreigners out. And the reason, we were told, is that the foreigners, the mercenaries, the terrorists, want to impose a sectarian society on Syria, which is the last secular society in the Middle East. It's the only society in which one religion, one religious group, is not fighting against another one and running things. That's not what we heard in Syria. So there's a sense of unity among the Syrians. And the unity is to save the Syrian state, save the culture, save the civil relations that the different groups have. And I'll give you one example, and then I'll stop so that you can ask questions. But one example, which I think was emblematic of what we heard. We met with the Grand Mufti. We thought he was the head of the Muslim community in Syria. And among other things, what he told us was, no, I'm the head of 23 million Syrians. I'm the Mufti for 23 million Syrians. Well, that's the total population of Syria, if you include people who have fled Syria because of the violence. And his close friends are the Orthodox bishops, and they said the same thing. We are the bishops of 23 million Syrians, and the reason we say that is we don't ask each other, we don't divide each other as Sunni, Shia, Alawite, Kurd, Assyrian, or whatever else the other ethnic groups are, or religious sects are, which Christian sect. We don't divide ourselves up. We consider ourselves Syrian, and we do not want to let these foreigners and the countries that support them divide us up and cause us to fight each other. We refuse to do that. And I believe that's one of the reasons that Syria has been successful for the last 5 years in preventing the same kind of collapse that took place in Afghanistan and Libya and Iraq and Somalia and so many other places, if you look at U.S. history.
So the argument being, of course, that it wouldn't, even Russia, even Iran, even Hezbollah, fighting on behalf of or with the Syrian army, could not keep them going if there was not some social cohesion behind this within Syrian society that remains.
That I think is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Keep in mind that the Russians came in less than a year ago, and they came in at a point where the Syrian Arab Army, which is what the army is called. The Syrian Arab Army was exhausted, and I think that it is clear, to me anyway, it is clear that the support that the Russians have provided has turn things around so that the Syrian army is now able to take back territory that the terrorist mercenaries had taken over and liberated those territories for the Syrian people.
Now, you know, you're giving a very different impression than maybe a lot of people are getting in the press here. And a lot of people are getting on social media because there are forces out there that are presenting themselves as Democrats, right? The people that you're calling terrorists, that you're referring to as mercenaries, they're organized. They've got even organizations that, you know, these famous activist groups that are constantly quoted in the press here to talk about how the Syrian military is committing atrocities, how many civilians that Russian bombings are causing. And a lot of this is couched in, you know, democratic nomenclature, which is we're the good guys battling the evil Assad. And anybody who doesn't agree with us are Assadists. How do you answer them?
Well, we've been called Assadists. We've been told that we associate with unsavory governments for various reasons, and Assad is one. We don't either defend or attack Assad. He's not our president. We're not Syrian. We don't have a voice to vote. We don't have a right to vote in Syria, and neither do most of the people in the United States. And, in fact, our position as a peace council, and I think this was the position of all of the delegates, is that it's up to the Syrians to decide who their government is. When this foreign interference, this invasion, this aggression, it is not a civil war, it's an aggression. When that is over, then I think the people in the opposition, and the nonviolent opposition in Syria, are going to take on their role of opposing what they don't like and pushing what they do like and building their movements to develop their movements with the Syrian people. When we spent an hour and three quarters with Assad, I don't want to say that was the only thing we did or the most important thing we did, but we spent a lot of time with him, and he pointed out that the people of Syria, the vast majority, voted him in, over 70%, voted him in April of this year. There was an election. The United States said, don't have that election, there's a war on, right? Well, in the Constitution, which Syria created as a result of the opposition and the demonstrations before they became violent, an election was required in 2016, and it took place, and he won. 70% of the Syrian population lives in the government. 70% of the people who have fled have moved to the government-secured areas of Syria. Other people have fled the country. I don't know of any situations where people are fleeing to the terrorist, mercenary-controlled sections of the country. That's not what's happening. People support the government, and Assad happens to be the head of it. There was another point I wanted to make, but I've lost it for the moment, so...
That's all right. Well, I'm sure we're going to come back to it again. I just want to remind our listeners, that's the voice of my guest, Henry Lowendorf. He is a member of the Executive Committee of the U.S. Peace Council, who took a fact-finding delegation to Syria.
Was a one block in the city where protest was allowed, and they were there to keep the peace. He said, hey, my name is Brad, and I think we surely will mess up these meetings. These jokers will remember us in this city on the hill. I'd see you at the rallies, guitar on your knee. The calm inside the storm, from Prague to San Francisco, Miami to D.C. We traveled on the same roads, you were everywhere. With a smile on your face, in the redwood forest, to the streets of Tompkins Square. I'll go down to the water, and with the morning dew, I will watch the sunrise, and I'll smoke this joint for you. I'd see you on a bicycle, reclaiming the street, digging up the asphalt to plant a bandit garden and grow some food to eat. I got an email from Quito. He said, you've got to see this place. Everyone is rising up, come and see the future of this lovely human race. I'll go down to the water, and with the morning dew, I will watch the sunrise, and I'll smoke this joint for you. It was in New York town, sitting on a rooftop, talking about relationships and how to live them down. I heard you went down to Oaxaca to join the battle that was there. I see your picture in the paper with a bullet in your chest, in your eyes a distant stare. I'll go down to the water, and with the morning dew, I will watch the sunrise, and I'll smoke this joint for you. I'll go down to the water, and with the morning dew, I will watch the sunrise, and I'll smoke this joint for you.
Thank you, David Rojas and Bradwell. And when he was murdered by Comandante Aguilar and El Chino Zarate, there were two of his friends in the living room at Hell, where our station was at the time. But I'm always forgetting. Oh, yeah, that was the... Oh, that was Mexico, Oaxaca. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of the same Contra War. Mm-hmm. He's talking about here. No.
Do you have another?
Hold that thought. Hold on. I got to get off the mic first. Because I got to go to this again.
Last week of
talking
July
about the Contras as recently as yesterday, ago, 10 points down the dial. Surprise, surprise.
Syria. We're talking about their look at inside of Syria, what they saw on that delegation. And I'm sort of pointing out how that differs from the view that we're getting in the press here and what we're seeing in social media from people who support what they're calling the rebels inside of Syria. Now, listen, there is danger here of this growing wider. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe you know how much the U.S. is actually spending per day right now. I understand that the bombing raids are costing in excess of almost $12 million per day. The bombing sorties that the U.S. is making inside of Syria, which they claim is to attack ISIS and to help their forces to attack ISIS. But as I said earlier in the segment, it seems as if the so-called rebels that they claim they are bolstering to support to fight ISIS are in fact engaged against the Syrian Defense Forces, the Syrian army. Does that seem to be your reading of it as well now?
Yes, it's quite obvious, even reading the propaganda, it's quite obvious that the United States, the primary goal of the United States is not battling ISIS. The primary goal of the United States is to overthrow Assad. And the United States wants to overthrow a secular, democratic government. There aren't very many in the Middle East. Certainly, Syria is far more democratic than Saudi Arabia or Qatar, who are funding the terrorists.
Or even U.S. supported governments, Middle Eastern dictatorships like Bahrain.
Yes, right. Where we have a big naval base, in Qatar, where we have a big air base. So, we being the U.S. We want to get back to this issue of the news media reports that what I'm saying goes against them. I have a question for you, and that is, do you know of any reports that detail or describe or even mention the attacks by these terrorist groups, however they're called, moderates or immoderates, whatever, describe the attacks on the Syrian population? Have you seen any reports of that? Aside from beheadings, but okay, those are the extremists the U.S. says it's against. But aside from that, do you hear any reports of the shelling of hospitals in the Syrian secured areas? Do you hear the reports of shelling of houses, of destruction of property, of churches and so forth in the secured area? If you have, I'd be interested in that, because I haven't.
Well, the only report that I saw of any killing on behalf of U.S.-backed Syrian rebels was the report of the Al-Zinki group, which the State Department acknowledged is part of what they call the Free Syrian Army, which people don't believe exists. That's just the name they give as other guests have explained on this program, for everybody who's receiving some U.S. dough and some U.S. arms and some U.S. advisors on the ground. But the only thing I've heard of was the beheading of that poor 12-year-old boy, that poor 12-year-old child by the Al-Zinki. I've never seen any photos in the U.S. press or heard of any reports of the casualties, civilian casualties, of U.S. operations or forces working on behalf of the U.S.
So while we were there, one of the terrorist groups that occupies the outskirts of Damascus dropped shells, mortars, onto a restaurant in Old Damascus. We're talking about thousands of years old. Old Damascus, killing 8 people and wounding many others. That happened while we were there. I was shown, after we interviewed the president of Damascus University, as we were leaving, they stopped the caravan that we were in, and they grabbed me and took me into the School of Architecture, which has basically curtains under the ceiling, because the School of Architecture had been attacked, and a shell had killed a number of students and faculty, and they wanted me to see what had happened to the School of Architecture, and they wanted me to see the shell. They brought it out. I have a picture of them holding this exploded shell. That's a report that never made it, as far as I know, into the U.S. media. Any media, the progressive, the alternate, the corporate, no media covers that. No, you know, you may find some reference somewhere to the shell that hit the restaurant, but this is going on every day. This is going on every day around Syria. And there are very few reports. The fact is that there are some, as you have a reporter on the ground in Syria, and
Ala Ibrahim, yes.
And one of our delegates on our delegation, Vanessa Bealey, who is a British citizen based in France, went after the delegation. She's gone back to Syria, so she's now in Syria, going into more detail, interviewing people, going to the various cities that are under siege by the terrorists. So she is one person you can look her up, Beely. And the other reporter is Ava Bartlett, a Canadian who was in Syria before we got there, had just come from Aleppo, which wasn't safe to drive to Aleppo at that point, but she went there anyway. Sister Agnes Miriam goes back and forth to Aleppo, and you know, they take devious routes to avoid the snipers and the terrorists, but they get in and they get out. So you can read these reports from within the government secured areas.
But just to be fair, Henry, I when I took your question, I understood it to mean in the mainstream media. But to be fair to our reporter, our Flashpoint special correspondent Ala Ibrahim on the ground in Damascus, when he reports, he does report on civilian casualties caused by the so-called U.S.-backed rebels. He does.
And I really you're introducing me to him, because until you did, I didn't know that. So it's an indication. So I follow this issue fairly, you know, I've, as much as anybody, not everybody. I'm not as knowledgeable as some folks, but certainly more knowledgeable than a lot of folks. And those reporters, I didn't know Vanessa Bealey until we took this delegation, and I'd never heard of Eva Bartlett before we took this delegation. And I haven't, you know, Ali, I didn't know before I talked to you. The point is that these reporters on the ground within Syrian government security, you understand I'm using specific terminology because I want to be careful. I want to be thoughtful about what is actually happening. that these reporters are just not known. They're not reported. Progressive alternate media don't cover. You do, but there's a lot of alternate media that simply repeats what the corporate media, and the corporate media repeat what the State Department want them to repeat. So we have, you're right, there's a one-sided propaganda war. We need to hear far more coming out of the real Syria. We need to hear far more. One of the things that we were told to do is get more delegations into Syria. Get people there. Let them see for themselves. Let them meet the Syrian people. And Syria has perhaps the oldest culture in the Middle East, going back thousands of years. And well, they're very proud of it.
And we should say that maybe a lot of people don't know, but there are the elements of World War III in Syria. I mean, there are so many different forces, international forces, involved on the ground in Syria. And when you've got Russia and the United States now basically acting as though they might be acting as if they've got proxy armies. I mean, in some ways, it is a proxy war in terms of the forces that they are supporting on the ground. And we know that Russian pilots now are able to wave to U.S. pilots as they fly by each other, and that their forces that they're, you know, you've got Iran, you've got even Iraq is there, you've got Egypt, you've got Saudi Arabia, you've got Qatar, you've got the U.S., you've got Russia, everybody's there, right?
And you have these mercenaries from 80 countries. Let me make something I think is important.
50 nuclear weapons in Sirlik in Turkey, right? Not that far outside of it either.
Very close. And in fact, during the real attempted coup on Erdogan, the electricity went out in Sirlik. And how are they going to protect it? So, yes, we've got U.S.-based, U.S. nuclear weapons based in Turkey, just outside of Syria. We have all these terrorist groups, these extremist groups flowing through Turkey, all over Turkey, and now attacking Turkey. But I want to make a point, and the point is this. Of all those groups that are fighting in Syria, Russia has been invited by the legitimate, it's a legitimate based on UN, among other things, legitimate government has been invited. Iran, Lebanon have been invited.
So you're saying, just so that we're clear, Syria is the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad is officially recognized by the United Nations as the seated government of that country.
That is correct. And under the UN Charter, the United States has no right to be in Syria at all. We are there our government has sent people in, is paying mercenaries, Contras, whatever you want to call them, paying them or using Saudi Arabia to pay them illegally.
Yeah, in a Contra war, exactly. So, how is this? 10 points down the dial. They are actually, even my friends and foes, not even backing off the gas after Libya, because socialist elected President Assad had 55% support before the Arab sting stunning in its racism and misogyny. And he got 70% votes in April. Eso me hace loco, sabes? But I did love Kevin Pena's interview with a member of the delegation who went to Syria on yesterday's Flashpoint. He said, it's not our right to decide who will lead the government of Syria. It's our responsibility to oppose our own government's intervention and flagrant violation of international law. And I have always known the Contra War because it drove me out of the mountains to where the weapons came from, where I will be waking up looking down the tracks because they have to cross the public right away. Yeah, if Contra Hillary or gets moved back into the Oval Office, they have to move back into the tracks. Where the guy to the end of the world tells us we have to escort the Contras to the hospital like Dorothy was doing. She got knocked on her can by the popo when they were circling around to block the view, and she had the flashlight at night, and they were bending my fingers over backwards. But The contrary, she was escorting him to the hospital to get the bullet taken out of his head. She was protecting him from the Sandinistas down in Nicaragua. I said, you can't kill her to his buddies up in wherever. She's the only one taking care of our family. So that's the punchline to the guy to the end of the world. And the nurse that ran the clinic where she worked had caught the nurse, head of the nurse, chopped off by the Contra with a machete, who was locked up for like a few years because they had to vote for this Contra Aleman to get us, you gringo, to stop the Contra war that drove me to the tracks where Hillary will be driving me back. Because she's the Contra. Mr. Bill was sending the National Guard when even the Republicans knew better. But anyway, that's my little anecdote to that.